At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. With the More Rewards credit card from Navy Federal Credit Union, you can earn 3 times the points at supermarkets, food delivery, and gas, plus 1 point on everything else. You can learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. Name's Andrew, here with Morgan and Marcus, doing this thing like we always do every single week. What's up, guys?
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morgan, you got some big news. You want to share? We'll let you share.
Want to share on our podcast?
Yeah, you can share that, the news. Sure? Yeah.
I have officially announced for the 8th District of Texas congressional seat. So I am wanting to become our United States Congressman. Thank you.
Man, that's exciting.
You are going to be.
Yes, the next.
The 8th District.
Now I was a SEAL teammate, too.
So
I
got See?
Oh, that's cool. It was meant to be.
I got a hat with an 8 on it.
Meant to be. Well, dudes, we got a great podcast guest in store, but before we get that, we got a Patreon question of the day. What is your proudest parent moment?
Matt, you go first.
Go ahead.
I don't think I've had one yet. Honestly.
What a great answer. I got an 18-year-old. Go with that, too.
I got an 18-year-old, 16-year-old, and a 9-year-old girl, soon-to-be 9-year-old girl. And, you know, I guess as becoming a parent was a proud moment, but I'm still waiting for that that mic drop of inspiration or education to put into these girls that will – I guess they'll tell when I die that this is what my dad did for me.
I haven't had one yet.
All right. So the other day we had one of the cousins got married at the ranch. All the family was out there and the whole day was over and we were packing up one of the cars for the aunts and uncles to leave. And one of the uncles leaned down, Axe was standing there. We were all kind of standing there and I had turned around and was lifting up some other stuff to put in the car. And the uncle goes, Axe, he's like, you're sharp as a tack. And he turns around under his breath. He goes, no, nah, I'm sharp as an axe. And I turned around. I was like, "What?" My son's name is Axe. And I was like, what'd you say, boy? He was like, I'm sharp as an axe, Dad. And I was like, yes, you are. And then the other day, we were coming from basketball camp. And we were going to camp. I was like, son, hey, you want me to sit there and hang out and watch? We play? Because our father would sit and watch us. I don't know. I guess it kind of stirred us up. So he never came back much. He thought it made us nervous and whatnot. I was like, do you want me to sit there? And he's like, I don't want you to get nervous. He's like, I'd like to have you there, Dad, because I'd like to do my best in front of you at all times. And I was like,
crying like a baby.
I turned around, walked off. I turned back around, yelled at him for something he didn't even do.
For me, it was something simple the other day. My baby boy Lincoln, he's a little bitty guy. And Gunner, my oldest, was in there, and the three of us were brushing our teeth. And Lincoln comes walking and grabs a toothbrush, and I was like, buddy, you need to go get your stool so he could reach to the faucet to turn the water on. He's like, no, daddy, takes his toothbrush, reaches up as high as he can with the toothbrush, turns the water on with his toothbrush.
Oh, nice.
Puts the toothpaste on it, wets it down, and then turns it off.
How you like me now?
Yeah, got this. I got this.
We got a thinker.
Oh, man.
Hey, my little guy.
Somebody call Elon up.
He's ready. Yeah, that's a good question.
Thank you guys so much for asking your Patreon question. If you want to ask Patreon questions to the guests, to the host, you can join us at patreon.com/teamneverquit. We got exclusive access to the show, some awesome swag, and all kinds of other cool stuff. We got a cool guest in store. Morgan, you actually brought this one to my attention. Matthew Long, 17-year veteran of the fire department, New York Fire Department, 9/11 survivor and author of The Long Run. But after a life-changing accident in 2005, Matthew has pushed his limits to achieve things that far surpass what any doctor said he would ever be able to do again. Matthew, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. We got on here, man versus bus winner.
Yeah, man versus bus winner.
We'll get into this in a little bit, man, but if you're going to go at it anyway, that's the way to do it, brother. When I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, we need to meet this guy. So I'm talking, so we're doing that. Mike Ross is doing Pops, a.k.a. Pops, is doing that 31 miles a day for 31 days.
Amazing.
For 31 Heroes in May for the extortion guys. And myself and Andy and Kendall and Thornberry and Tide and everybody, all our brothers went out there and we were doing it at the ranch, just doing 10-mile loops over and over and over again. We got done. We're sitting by the pool, which I'm pretty much dog shit at this time. And Pops has got to get up and running again in the morning. We were talking about how the hell are you so tough? And he's like, hey, your name came up. I don't remember exactly what the spark was that brought Matt's name up. And he's like, you got to hear this story. And he starts going on about Matt's background, the accident, and then the next phase post-incident. And I was like, bullshit. And we called him up right there at the table. Got on the phone with him.
And now here we are.
Like, but we have to have you.
They told me about it. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to hear this from him. So let's do this.
Yeah.
Take us back.
Let's talk a little before the bus, you know. So about a year and a half before, I'm in my mid-30s, late to mid-30s, and I've always prided myself of being active and being engaged and stuff. And I was a little overweight, out of shape, complaining about the bad back kind of thing. And the crew that I was running with, one of my friends, we had this little trigger, my friend Noel. If we wanted to do something, it could be anything, but he or I would start with, are you scared? And that, well, you know, it's on. So
as soon as that comes out,
as soon as that comes out, you don't know what he's going to ask you next. I'm not scared.
You just have to say yes.
So, yeah. So about, he's like, hey, let's do a triathlon. And raise some money at the time, you know, get involved. I'm like, all right, we're both single, living in the city. I'm like, I'm in. I got to get a bike. I got to learn how to swim. And, I mean, I grew up on the ocean in Rockaway Beach. I can swim in the ocean, but I have to learn how to swim. I have to learn how to go for a mile straight or
right, because there's a difference between what people say, oh, I know how to swim, and then swimming.
Yep, 100%. And I learned quickly. I remember the first swim practice we were doing with this group to get involved, and because we're going to do it right. So we got involved with this big group and we're raising money for cancer. And I remember the first night at the pool, it had to be 8 lanes, 50 meter pool, had to be about 150 of us on the deck. And the coaches are trying to gauge your experience. So they had the first lane fast, then it was medium, then it was another medium, then it was slow. Then it was like, you need fucking help.
Remedial. And then there's the pool deck group,
right? And they were back over in the kiddie pool. I start right here with the water wings. I've been in there.
So I got like 12 years in the fire department right now, and I'm like, I played basketball in college. I'm just sizing people up on the deck. Like, oh, I'll take that guy. I'm gonna be faster than that girl. So I went into the first medium lane. Thought that was like center pool. I was good shape. 50 meters down, the coach was at the other end hitting me with a stick when I got to the wall. He goes, you're
in the way.
I was doing too good. I'm doing too good.
You're moving me up.
All right, cool. I was being modest.
He goes, we're not here to fight the water. Move to the first lane. You need some help. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
At least I didn't quit.
Got it done. So I did my first triathlon with this guy. I lost a little bit of weight, got back in good shape, and I got bit by the endurance bug. And that brings me to April of 2004. I did my first triathlon, and then I signed up for an Ironman the next year.
So it's a year in between from when you first jumped in the pool till when you were doing it?
To an Ironman.
Yeah. Wow.
I did 15 in between the Ironman, but they're like, no, you should wait. Don't jump. I go, I'm 37 years old. I don't have time to wait. We're going. Yeah. And so I signed up for the Ironman. I got into phenomenal shape. I was probably back in college shape. And I was running fast. I qualified for the Boston Marathon. Everything was going right.
So people don't understand that when you qualify the Boston, you're running sub 330s, especially 315 for me.
Yeah, I had him sub 315.
Yes. Were you a runner before that?
Just to stay in shape. If ever, you know,
yeah, like the rest of us, right? Like the jogging after workout.
Yeah. Nothing serious. I remember asking one of the guys in the fire department, a lieutenant who was really good runner, you know, 3-hour marathon guy, and you know, a little guy, you know, he could just run, rabbit off. I said, hey, how do I get faster? He goes, run faster. And he walked away from me.
Well, so that's the same piece of advice like I got from one of my instructors. Man, how do you run like that? He goes, I don't know, man. I can just run. But that doesn't help me.
It doesn't help me,
because some people don't. They just can't get. My brother, and he runs with, you know, Goggins and all of them, and with Pops the other day. I was like, hey, man, is there a time when you're running that you kind of break through a threshold? Like they talk about that runner's high, to where you want to keep doing it. Because before that, it's just like, you know, I got to run. It's just do your deal. Just get in shape. I'm going to do my miles so I can make sure I can run this distance. And then there's the guys who do this. And there is a transition, right? There is something that hits you that's like, I got to.
Yeah, most certainly.
All right. Yeah.
100% that happens. And that happened to me because I was not that guy. And then I quickly became the guy. Not only was I going to 5Ks and 10Ks, but I was running to them.
Yeah.
Like Pops would go to the Boston Marathon and he'd run reverse.
Yeah.
In the morning and then run the race.
Right.
Yeah, what an
idiot. I mean, that's a good tip. I know, right? What a waste of time, huh? that happens. There's a switch. It's like you're running and all of a sudden it just comes in. You're like, oh, I got it.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I tell people on anything like that. Just keep running. It will happen. And when it does, you'll never look back.
Yeah.
And I got bit by the bug. So I did my first Ironman 2005, qualified for the Boston Marathon. What could go wrong? Everything was just set up. I was feeling great. I was single, living in Manhattan. I owned 2 or 3 different bars or had percentage points in different bars and restaurants. And I was a firefighter.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
And then freaking transit authority went on strike. I was forced to ride my bike not like hardcore like Goggins where he goes out no matter what. If it was cold and rainy, my bike had no rust on it. I put it on the trainer and stay inside. So it was freezing out December 22nd, 2005. The city was shut down. So I was like, I got one day to work before Christmas vacation. I'll take my bike. I got 2 blocks. Boom. A private bus made a turn off Third Avenue that normally wouldn't have made and took me underneath.
All right, I just got one question before we get into this whole. Now that I'm older, I always look back on the moments where when everything was going good, then I went out and I got into something and it happened like that. Were there any signs, telltale signs, before you got on the bike? Like I had a flat tire, something to prevent you from getting on the bike, or everything just went perfect? Like get your ass on the bike and go, because that's a sign, right? I was like, it was supposed to happen to you so you could become this.
Nothing stopped me.
Yeah. Okay.
There was no obstacle, but yeah, you're right. This was supposed to happen to me.
Yeah. God's plan. So you're cruising into work. The bus makes an illegal left turn.
Right-hand turn.
Illegal right-hand turn. Sucks you right up underneath the front of the bus, or did it catch you like underneath the backside?
In between the wheels. The wheel didn't run over me. I was pulled under the chassis.
Okay. And it drug you for blocks.
No, that never happened.
Okay. Yeah, what? How? Give me
maybe
the detail.
Maybe in the movie that'll happen.
Back to the bus barn, it parked.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like knocking on the door. Hey.
I'm under here. Down here. So, I mean, it hit you, drug you under.
So he may have moved a little bit because he was making a slow turn. But I would assume the bus driver thought he clipped the car or clipped the garbage pail from the corner. the bike and me became one. The bike cut me right in half. Stemless.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say that wrapped you up, right? You were riding when you got hit.
Yep. And so the bike frame cracked in half, and the seat post ripped me apart. Took it up to my sternum. My abdominal wall was out. Femoral artery severed. My right leg. My doctor, who did a lot of military stuff, got from guys coming home. He said he's never seen anything like it. And he said your right leg was no longer functionally attached to your body.
And you said you were eviscerated? Like completely bowels out?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you got hooked up.
Keep going.
So, you know, the biggest obstacle was
how'd they get you out of the bus. Yeah, I was gonna say, how'd they get you up underneath the bus?
But the police, ESU workers were one of the first emergencies. Like the firehouse was right around the corner.
Thank God.
And I was in and out of consciousness. And honestly, the last thing I remember is this firefighter Buckley. I where I lived in Midtown, I owned a couple bars, so I knew all the firemen, and the firemen knew me. It wasn't because I was some hero firefighter; they all knew me. They knew me because they knew where to get a beer and on a discount on Paddy's Day.
Equal respect. That's equal respect, brother.
So I remember specifically him taking my hood off because it was below 15 degrees. So my helmet came off, then they took my hat on. And he said, "Holy shit, it's Matty Long from 43 Truck." And that's when I went to sleep. And I say to people now, I said, that's when I knew I was in good hands. You know, they knew who I was. They weren't going to let a brother go down.
Right.
And so what I was told from there is now, a Sergeant Kelly from Rescue One of ESU One, not Rescue One, ESU One. He looked at him and said, "You know him? He's a fireman." I said, "Yes." And he, instead of putting on the blue surgical glove and doing all the things to protect yourself, he just reached into my femoral artery and held it shut. And
shut the artery down. Yeah.
While they hijacked the bus and pulled me out.
I mean, we got to go.
Mic drop.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say to that, because it's not only okay. So you're cut from tip to tail, femoral bleed, which most people need to know. If you slice that femoral artery, it's a matter of less than a minute that you'll bleed out.
Oh man! And those things, it's like a rubber band. It's like a retract. I mean, the fact that he got to that's amazing. On top of everything,
and because once he grabbed a hold of it, there's no letty go. You got to hang on until you get to the docks.
And most people, when they grum up on an accident, they'll look at the your guts hanging out and all the blood and everything, bones broken. That doesn't mean anything. That stuff will keep going. It's pretty amazing. But those arteries are completely different. Once you tack one of them out,
the 200 and I always mess this number up. Let's see if brother knows because he's a medic. There's 211 bones in the body?
You got 200 and around 70-something when you're born. As you grow older and the bones fuse together, it can go anywhere from 206 to 212, and then everyone's different.
And you broke 200, right? 203, 200, almost all of them?
They never gave me a bone count, but yeah, I broke some bones. Yeah. I mean, I had 43 surgeries in a 5-month period.
That's awesome.
You were talking about the blood loss, right? So in the first 10 or 11 hours, they gave me 68 units of blood. And he's like, my doc's like, you bled out 10 or 11 times. We just kept giving it to you because every time we look up at the monitor, your heartbeat was still going. 30, 28. He's like, this guy's not going to die.
We can't kill this dude.
You did not have a head injury, correct?
No.
Because you had a helmet on, right?
Had a helmet on.
Thank you. I'm driving my point home as a brain scientist. Wear a helmet.
I had a open head cut, but no brain trauma, thank God. Just everything else from here down.
Neck down. Yeah, we got that. Put that back together. All right, so after they got to the hospital,
how long was that? That golden hour? They get you in and under?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was probably in the hospital within 40 minutes.
That's amazing.
And so I got really lucky. Like my doctor, My one doctor who's no longer with us, but I was really tight with him. We would go out afterwards, and I'm like, how do you do it? He's like, listen, he goes, you were the perfect perfect situation. He goes, I hate to say it, but if you would have got hit by that bus 40 minutes later with rush hour kicking in, you're dead. He goes, you got hit at 5:30 in the morning. You got to the hospital by 6:10. Every surgical room that you were in, and you were in them all, was prepped for today's surgery. So the guy coming in for the colonoscopy, the woman coming in for something else, they all got pushed back, and you went boom, 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 boom. And every doctor took care of what they had to take care of. And then we just prayed.
Yeah, and the fact that it was so cold, that had to have helped a little bit, right?
I would imagine. I always thought, because I was wrapped up in spandex and all sorts of cycling apparel, I was like, hey, maybe this helped. And he was like, no.
Nah, no. Not that. Yeah, but
cold air must. Yeah, I mean, the way kind of vasorestrictive. I wonder if that.
Yeah, I never asked him that. I'll have to ask my trauma surgeon.
It's like when slows you, everything if, down. If you drown in salt water or,
fresh water. Or
chlorine water, it's better to drown in, not that you want to do this, cold salt water. Don't do it, but that's the thing. It's a thing.
I've done it.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But you can make it. All right, go ahead.
So the long road to hoe, you kind of, how long were you in the hospital?
I was in the hospital total 5 months.
Coma or no?
About 4 to 5 weeks in a medical induced.
Medical induced, right? Okay. And
I was intubated. You could see the trach.
Oh, they trached you.
Yeah, I was trached. I had a feeding tube for a while.
Yes.
It was.
We got full bennies.
I had it all. I for a long time, I had an external fixator coming out my abdomen that was holding my pelvis. And I was just, that's how I laid in bed. It was a little shelfy. Like,
cool. Dude.
External fixator on the chest, dude. That's intense.
Yeah, my leg. I had one on my leg and my abdomen. It went into my abdomen and held my pelvis together.
So what was the final, okay, this is what happened, diagnoses? Broke. They saved your leg, right?
Yeah, I didn't lose anything, thank God. My right leg has partial paralyzations. Up in the stabilizer muscles, the adductors, they're gone. I joke with everybody that I got one ass because my right glute is basically paralyzed. So it's just basically sagging down the back of my kneecap now.
Is that true?
That's not sagging my kneecap. I don't have it. Like, yeah, I don't have. I remember when I met my wife and we went somewhere and she put a hand on my back and said, do me a favor, touch the other side.
Use that other pocket.
Feel better.
Right. So you have mobility, but just not feeling in it?
Like no feeling. Right. And no, like, I can't stand on my right leg alone.
Okay,
I can stand all day on my left, but if I go to stand on my right, I would just fold at the hip.
Because we had a young lady on here, and she can't feel any of her lower body. And she won Dancing with the Stars.
She was on, but she ran the Boston, too.
Yeah, yeah.
She lost all feeling from the waist down.
You just, like, no sensation at
no
all.
No sensation. Nothing. She has functionality.
But it's like it was like her mind. She taught it to jump over. Normally, you feel all that, but it can work without it.
Yeah. So I was like, "Oh, you picked up the perfect sport, running." Victoria Arlen's her name. She's good. Look her up. Y'all, good. Gracious.
Okay, so they pulled you out of for the first 4 months. You just, or four weeks. You just had to lay there. I mean, you just healing. That's that healing factor. And then everyone was coming in, and in your mind was like, "Hey, because I'm sure they were saying you're not going to be able to walk again, do all this again."
So that's you're in coma for a month and a half?
4 to 5 weeks in the coma. So they were telling my family this, you know, getting my family prepared. And then when I woke up, and I remember my trauma surgeon coming in, and I'm like, all right. And I got hands on that fixator, and I'm like, when am I getting out of here? And the doctor's like, you got to slow down. I said, what do you mean you got to slow down? I said, I got to go home. I got things to do. And I didn't really realize how much was it connected to me. And he says, listen, you were run over by a bus. And
was it a big guy's like you? The first question was it a big bus?
Yeah, you're going to be here quite a while. You know, we joke in the fire department, you know, truck and engine, you know, there's a little internal rivalries, you know.
Yeah.
And so all the guys in the truck are like, ah, at least you got hit by a big bus. Come on,
there you go. Yeah.
I'll never let you hear the end of it.
At least it wasn't a Prius.
Yeah, and it didn't hit me. I hit it. Yeah. I ran over that damn thing.
Start taking it out from underneath.
Come on.
So he gave me that bad news, and you know, that might have been the beginning of the mental struggles of what was really happening. And then I was starting to realize, like, wait a minute, I can't. What's that around my leg? Why can't I move my leg? And my right shoulder was shattered, and that was like in a machine that would help me go up and down, because they basically said if you don't move it, you're going to lose it. And I still don't have full range. That's as high as I can put it. I could throw it up there, but you know, so I still got some issues with my shoulder and my right side.
That's because you came around on you on that side, right?
So he came, I was on the right, boom, and I went down. So what I know exactly, so because I saw a video of it. There was a surveillance video caught, and when the bus was coming to me and I realized it finally, I just put my hand up and started, like, I banged the window like, wah, boom, and then I was gone. So this shoulder took the ground.
Yeah. Did that make that video make the news?
No, the video never was released. It was from a surveillance camera, so we kind of buried it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So talk about when you kind of come into and the realization of what happened. You said that mental fight came on. I mean, is it just like despair, or was it always, I mean, you're a firefighter through 9/11, every athlete. With us, we kind of get hurt a lot. It's like, oh, you know, I'll heal up after this and just Charlie Mike.
No, it wasn't. It was about a year and a half of some, you know, dark thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I lost my job, lost my career, something I really loved to do. I lost more than that too, because I was single. You know, I went home for 2 years with a colostomy bag. I went home in a wheelchair. I was 122 pounds when I left the hospital. You know, I remember when my therapist was like, all right, you're getting ready to exit. And therapy became like, she's like, okay, let's get you propped up with the walker in front of the mirror and you could shave. And this is the first time, this is about 4.5 months in, it's the first time I saw my face.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, holy shit. And I was just, you know, gone.
Emaciated.
And she's trying to teach me, to show me whether I can shave or not, you know, with what I had. And I'm looking at me, she said, what's the matter? I said, my grandfather's 90. I look older than him. And you know, he was a good looking 90-year-old.
Yeah, what's up?
Of course.
But I didn't want to look 90. At
always positive.
So I remember that when I first saw myself in the mirror, I was like, holy shit. And that's when everything started going, like, what is my life going to be like? You know, forget about what happened to me. What's going to happen? What am I, you know, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And that was tough. That was a really tough challenge.
I always ask people this, where, just so I know, people that in your extraordinary situations, where did you go to rehab? Who brought you out of the hole?
Yeah. I want to know that too. Like, there had to be that kick.
Because a lot of people are lost.
Screw this, man. I ain't sitting back.
You rallied back to the light.
It's like your teammates, the Lord, all that.
You know, I have no military background. My dad was a Marine. But you guys know what it's like. And I know what it's like now because I was a firefighter, you know, quasi-military. But the brotherhood, I don't think you could argue that the brotherhood bond is any
different. Our fight's different. Who and what we fight is different. Other than that, that's the same lineup. Uniform's different. Yep. That's it. That's how it works.
So from the beginning, and I'm the first firefighter in my family. I have a couple guys on Wall Street, a couple guys here, two teachers, you know. From the beginning, that side of my life brought them to another level. Like my parents, 5 months in the hospital, every night dinner was served from a different firehouse in the city.
Oh, man, that's so awesome. Thank you for saying that. I was wondering, but that is something that y'all do, take care of each other like that.
Every night. And they were driving my mom and dad on their own time to and from the hospital. There was no stress. I mean, I was there Christmas. I was there New Year's Eve. You know, like, oh, my God, we usually have a nice spread on Christmas, family together. Oh, well, guess what? There was filet mignon, shrimp cocktail. It was going down.
Oh, yeah.
It was being cleaned in the hospital sink. So that side of me up here was like, okay, like, if I quit,
they'll
or
quit.
I don't pull through. I let that team down.
Right?
Some external pressure.
That's one part of it. You know, I also have 8 brothers and sisters, and their lives went on hold for 5 months. Every night, there was a family member next to my bed, if not all. And sometimes I was a little bit of a jerk to them, and I was like, you know, like I was kind of stuck, and I didn't like someone behind me. And my older brother was always somehow winding that chair behind me. I'm going, what are you doing? What are you doing back there? I need everybody in front of me. I need to see everyone. So, but that's team number two that I couldn't let down. You know, then there's your mom and dad. My mom was the one who was really the pillar of strength. I always tell the story of that. But so back into the rehab itself, that was the mental side of, okay, why, who am I fighting for besides myself? I'm fighting for those who said Matt's not going to give up, who said Matt's going to make this. But then, so I did my rehab originally in the hospital that saved my life. I stayed there because I was comfortable. I knew I had more surgeries to come. So I was taken in and out of rehab a few times to go for more surgery. I had so much scar tissue. In fact, I just had a surgery a year and a half ago. I have so much scar tissue in my intestines that they just get tied up.
Yeah.
And so I'm almost 15 years out. My doctor was like, I was in and out of the hospital for 2018, 7 times with intestinal blockages. Mm. And he goes, dude, enough's enough. I got to go back in.
Yeah.
So, you know, took 2 months off. I just laid in bed. That's what he told me how to do. You know, don't risk any hernias and stuff like that. And that's one of the guys like us. And I hate to make that comparison to you guys, but the hardest thing is to do nothing.
Right. Just lay. Yeah. It's almost impossible.
Almost like, give me something. Give me that 5-pound purple weight and let me just
something.
Do some risk. I got to do something. So I did that. And then once I started to put my mind into what I was actually doing and not go through the motion, I needed the next step. So I needed to get out of New York City. But the trigger for that, there was this homeless guy who was always around the corner from my house, and he was always outside the Starbucks, and I was going in with my 2 crutches to get my coffee. And I go, hey, big man. He goes, Hey man, you that fireman that got hit by the bus? And I was, and this is, you know, over a year later, I'm going, even the homeless guy knows who I am.
Right.
I said, I am. He goes, oh man, I prayed for you. I said, thank you very much, man. And I pray for you every day. And, I just said, I got to get out of the city. And I found a place in Phoenix, Arizona, in Tempe, that I sent them all my information. I sent a couple of people in California and Arizona, warm weather states. I wanted to get out of the city during the winter. And I sent them all my injuries. I sent them all newspaper articles. And I said, I want to run again. And one team, two young guys, Mark and Kyle, and they wrote me back saying we would never tell anyone they couldn't run again. What, I moved out there in a week.
What was the name of their spot?
I wish I could remember. Jesus. But Kyle, Mark has since moved on from the rehab place. Derek, who owned the place, is going to be mad at me. But Kyle owns a place still in Chandler, Arizona, called Triplex Training. So he was my personal trainer, and Mark was my therapist. And I moved out there sight unseen, captain in the fire department. I was nervous about getting on the plane because I still was kind of, I had to drive a handicapped vehicle. I still really, my legs were not really with me. And he flew out with me, Frank Carino. We went out and I got an apartment, went to work 5 days a week. I would work out with them twice a day. I would swim at the pool, the apartment I had, get back into swimming. And I ran my first mile after living in Phoenix for three months.
I'm sure that everything they brought to bear, that nutrition, exercise, physiology, and massage therapy.
All you got to do is show up.
Yep, I had a massage therapist there in the place, Jenna. I signed her up. I was very fortunate to have insurance. I was very fortunate to, I was a successful business owner, so I had some money where I could do this. This is not something that everyone could do. And I was single. So, you know, when you're married and kids, you're like, okay, maybe I'm not going to spend this on me because I got to save it for them. Mm-hmm. But I was single. So I was like, all right, every dime in my bank went to get the apartment, to rent a car, to pay insurance, to pay for these guys.
That's almost like you throw yourself into that spot where you don't have time to think about it because you got to go do it. And when you're in there doing it, you're not thinking about it. You're kind of getting that, doing it, and that healing time doubles because you're not worried about what could go wrong or second guessing yourself. And when you have an amazing team, I have to go through the same thing still to this day. Every year I have to go down and do my physical therapy. And the team that puts me back together, it's like once I get in there, I just give everything to them. All you have to do is just show up. Our people are amazing. And there are people out there that no matter what you think's wrong with you or what you can't get done, there's somebody that's designed to help you get it done.
Yep. And on that side, it's the body. The body is amazing of what it can do. It, like, I don't have that glute muscle or my hamstrings. My right hamstring probably operates at like 30%. If I lay on my back, I can't do a hamstring curl with any weight, let alone my foot. And the body figures out a way to get it done.
Oh, yeah. It wants to stay.
The muscles are like, okay, relax. Relax. We're going to help out here. We're going to pitch in. And that's one thing I learned about the body, about being healthy. I'm like, you know what? You might not have a bad back. It's your body telling you to get the fuck up off the couch and lose the 20 pounds that's sitting in your belly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ain't got a bad back. You got a big belly.
Yeah. Being lazy.
Yeah.
It just that your story lends itself to that cohesive combining of modalities, focused efforts on getting someone better. It's such a short period. He and I both, again, broken backs, but a focused effort months later, not years or decades, months later, back up on step. But the mental game is paramount. Period.
Period. I had my pity parties. You know, I had them, and it was never why me. All right. This is what I it was never why me. Like, why did this happen to me? It was, why did I live? That was my pity party. Why did I survive? You know, and I'm sure you have these thoughts too. Yeah. Why am I the one who went home? Why did I survive? Why did I have to win over a 40,000 pound bus?
You're looking at it right now. We're talking about it.
Those answers are all still coming to me.
Yeah.
The longer I live my life and I, you know, I got my bub sticker right here on my thing. Says I'm going to die young as late as possible.
Remember, we always heard, man, you don't want to show back up with what you got issued. You want to slide into the gates and being like, man, I lived everything I got. I only got one life, but if you live it right, once is enough. And when we get hurt, there's a reason why they say mind, body, and spirit. All right, so if you bust up your body, people are like, oh, my mind's broken down. Well, it automatically shuts down so your body can heal. Because if you still had that go, go, go mentality in your mind, you're trying to push your body. That's why kind of when you drug up and they dose us up, man, they pull that our minds down, we'll go. And you keep breaking your body. And same thing, if you have a mental beat down, your body will feel depressed because it wants to stop so your mind can catch up. But then when you get those mind and body, your spirit comes back in. It's like the fuel. It's like, all right, man, I got something. I got dropped back in my race car. Let's do this. All right, my right blinker ain't working. That's okay. I got the left one. I got this thing over here. They'll know I'm turning, you know, and it's kind of, it wants to fix itself to operate. Now, you're a prime living example of that, man.
Yeah, I'm a very lucky man. The teams all fell. My therapist, I'm still really tight with them. The three girls that helped me. Julie, Lorraine, and Ina. I remember when I would do something small, but in their eyes and their profession, it was big. Like, I would get pissed. They're like, why aren't you happy? You just took six steps. I'm like, I just did an Ironman in 11 hours. I qualified for Boston. Six steps isn't doing it for me.
Yeah. So talk about that. You have to, you have to throttle back. That's kind of one of the hardest parts with guys like us, especially as we get. I was watching this movie the other day called Paper Tigers. I don't know if anybody's seen it, man, but it's martial artists when they were young. They were good, badass, virile, and then they get older and they get kids and they kind of slow down, but they get in a situation where they need to apply their skill sets. And if you hadn't practiced it, your mind's ready to go, but your body can't keep up with it. And that's the hardest thing for us is shutting that down. It truly is, especially when you get hurt. Now, retiring is one, kind of easing out of it's one thing, but man, as soon as you get snapped off the line, it's tough, right?
Yeah. And that, and just in the work aspect of it, when I didn't go back to my, I wanted to go back all the time to thank those guys. And I didn't like going back because I wanted to get on the truck. I wanted to drive the truck. I wanted to go back to my profession, do what I loved. And I don't really remember the moment in time that it clicked, but the truth of the matter is I'm 55 in 2 months. I get after it every day. And I could probably still do the job, but there's going to be an instance where there's an emergency where someone's at in harm's way and I'm going to be slow because of my leg or because of my arm. And I don't want to live with that. So that for somehow that triggered, that thought triggered it and said, I'm okay with not being a fireman
anymore. Yeah. You have to come to that realization that it's not about you anymore. It's about the betterment of the, not only the fire department, but who you're going after. Cause you're in a business saving lives and your ego has to step away or step to the side in order to say, look, I can't get that done. And they're counting on me.
Or you pass that. I mean, no one likes graduating school and having to get a job, right? I mean, but you always want to go back and hang out. And he's like, hey, not only can you do the job, you can probably do it better than them because you've been doing it. But I remember when we got hurt, the boss was like, hey, you guys are doing more now for the teams than you ever did when you were on the line. And you're like, wait, what does that mean?
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
I mean, what, I need to work out more? I don't even understand that. I don't even know what that means.
Is that bad?
Yeah. Why? I was like, no, you kind of, you.
My eval says I was doing great.
Yeah, you upgrade. You kind of graduate. So the younger guys coming in look to you. I mean, we look to you, what mm-hmm. you're doing. It's a motivation.
I agree with you 100%. I heard you talk about that. And I'm going to drop a little bomb right here for you. So I have to give a shout out to my guys at El Barrio's Bravest, Engine 53.
Oh, man.
Oh, the boys right there. Hey, we know exactly who that is.
You didn't know that was my house, did you?
That was your house?
43 truck. Mike wore my patch.
I saw it on your arm, man. I didn't.
Dude,
I
never, really?
I didn't get brought to my attention.
I know. I didn't want to.
Well, that's definitely a bomb, man. That's my wayward home, man. Every time before I was married, I'd go there and stay with you all the time. Now I got married, I got to stay in hotels instead of someone talking.
Oh,
about
I've spent some time. Hey, there's some story. Me and a bunch
had
of buddies
so
went
much
up there.
Fun with crashed, man.
We crashed in that house a few times.
All
you
the
guys
go,
went
man.
Like, hey, where do you need to go to party? Well, go down the street is that way. Instead, if you take a left out, you go into Spanish Harlem.
Yeah.
Right there. That's
if
the
you go right, you're supposed to go where we're supposed to go. We bebopped the wrong way. Lunda will start. I did not know that, man.
Yeah. So if I hadn't got hit by the bus and you said, where do we go? You say, just go with him.
That's crazy.
Oh, that's awesome.
How small of a
world that we're united like that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike's, Lieutenant Murphy's friend, Owen Callahan, was.
Yeah,
Owen.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He was a probie when I was in the truck. He was in the engine. He had a twin brother.
A cop. They switch. Those guys, we know those guys, man.
So that's how the relationship with 5343 came with Mike Murphy. And we have, they put a beautiful wall memorial in there.
Oh, yeah. That plaque in the stairwell coming back beautiful. Down, man.
And so when I got out of the hospital and finally started going back, I donated a whole bunch of a thank you for them. I bought her some fitness equipment, so they named the gym after me. So I go back like every 6 months to make sure they didn't change the name.
That is crazy.
Yeah, man. That's small world. I still have all my.
Oh, yeah.
I got a patch of rock hanging up in the vault.
Man, that's I don't even know where to go with that.
I know. As soon as New York squares it away, we need to get back up there and visit, man. Is 103rd? Is that where that's at? Did I get that street name right? Is it 103rd?
102nd and 3rd.
Yeah. Oh, man, we have fun with them guys. That's awesome.
It was a great house. It's still a great house. And I could tell you, if we're going to go down the firehouse road. And the funny thing about me going to Phoenix is years before 9/11, They were trying this little pilot program where they were doing like a swap, and they would send a New York firefighter to Phoenix and a Phoenix firefighter to New York. So the guy who came over from Phoenix, he was a captain. They're not aligned. Everyone's different. They'll do a clean-up job and do the right thing, but everything's different. So the guy that came over from Phoenix was a captain, but here he was a firefighter.
Right.
I get it. Anyway, great guy. They're like, he's going to be with us for 6 months. I'm like, okay, great. So they're like, you know, he's in tonight from the airport. Let's work it out. Let's show him New York City. No problem. No joke. Because I had the bars and was fireman. Dave gets a taxi from the airport. Shows up at 5343. Drop his bags. Quick hello. Boom. Limousine pulls up. And so his name, within 24 hours, went from Dave from Phoenix to Super Dave.
Oh, nice.
So we put him in a limousine, took him to Smith & Walensky Steakhouse, Chow Down Steak, took him to my bars and restaurants. And one of my places was super popular at that time. I mean, lines to get in. And we pull up in the limo, boom. I said, Dave, take a walk up and down the line. He goes, yeah, those three girls. I said, okay. Ladies, come on. Me, Dave, the girls, and a couple of firemen back right in. They're like, oh, this is awesome. I think Dave got lucky within 6 hours of being in New York City. So hence the Super Dave.
Well, most people don't realize there's a difference between, like you said, firefighters in New York and firefighters everywhere else, the way y'all have to fight. It's just like fighting in different war zones, in different AOs. If everyone in this country, if you don't have a friend in New York City that's a firefighter, you're wrong. When we would go up there, man.
Or a cop.
The show, do you want to see that city? You just pal around with them. Because y'all know every inch of that place. And all the places to go. We don't even have the vocabulary to express how wonderful. Man, that was so much fun. So much fun. That y'all are the greatest experience up there. Truly.
Most certainly.
Thank you.
So
they're some good people.
So what do we got now? Because you really just capitalized on everything.
Yeah, you got us off topic talking about damn fire.
Took off. Yeah.
Geez, man, maybe 2 hours talking about it. We're trying to be serious here, Matt. Come on.
Because now it's like, I won't say it never.
I can't believe you're at that house, man. That truly blows me. I don't mean to interrupt, dude. That just blows me away.
Because I've slept in the house.
I saw that when you raised your hand. I was like, oh, man, look at that.
There it is.
Can't be the same one, though. Yep, it is. Barrio's bravest, man.
Every tattoo should tell a story. It took me a long time to get this because I was plotting out my story, but it's very detailed, right? So there's an Iron Man, obviously, before my accident. There's a little running guy in there for before my accident, qualifying the Boston Marathon. There's my 9/11 two-star medal, which I lost in a fire. So they're telling me I might not be able to get it back. And so I said, screw it, I'll tattoo it to my arm. I don't need it on my uniform.
And we'll wash off, yep.
And then the grid is the bus running me over. And of course, I got 43 patch right there. So.
Hey, man, you were talking about running Iron Man. You know how you temper steel. You get it really hot, really cold, and beat the mess out of it. You're an Iron Man now.
Thank you.
Hey, that's no joke. A long iron, bro.
Titanium. Got a lot of that in me.
Oh, as you should.
Yeah, isn't that awesome? I tell people they don't have adamantium, man, but we get dosed up with that titanium. I feel great with it. Fellow brother in the titanium.
So after the fact, like it's not even happened, but you never even looked back because you're back into it full steam ahead.
Physically?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I never looked back. I definitely looked back but I needed to close the chapter on who I was. I didn't want my story to say, well, the bus, after he qualified Boston, after he did Ironman, the bus changed his direction in life. I wanted to go back and do a marathon. So within 3 years of the accident, I ran a marathon, but instead of 3 hours, I ran it in 7.5. And then a year after that, I went back to Lake Placid.
I can't even do that.
Ironman.
I can't even do that.
Lake Placid Ironman.
Yeah, Lake Placid Ironman in 2009. And there's only two people they remember at the Ironman, the person who wins and the person who comes in last place. And I came in 16 hours, 58 minutes and 6 seconds, spot on, dead last.
Anchorman.
I've been last place in an ultra marathon before, and they knew who I was when I got there.
it's funny. It's like they sent Ironman, sent a guy out, and with, you know, a little walkie-talkie and a GPS to kind of figure out if I was going to make it, because they were they had labeled me the everyday hero.
Boom.
And he comes out. It's like mile, Jake. This is funny. It's about mile 18. It's pitch black in the backwoods of the Adirondacks. I got glow. The one thing you never want when you're an able-bodied athlete is the glow sticks on you. It's like, I'm going to go with the glow sticks. And he goes, hey, Matt, my name's Jake. I'm with Ironman. I'm like, hey, Jake, if you're asking me to go faster, it ain't happening.
I don't need you here right now.
I was in a world of hurt. And he said, well, you're going to have to pick it up because I'm looking at the GPS and, you know, you're not going to make that midnight cutoff. So I said, Jake, you ever have a hero, have a guy go from hero to zero in 24 hours? And he said, nope. I said, tonight's not going to happen either. And I found another gear. And
it's amazing how people like that come up to you. They always hit you right when you're in a low. And the last thing you want to hear is somebody's like, hey, you need to pick it up a little bit.
Right.
I mean, it is miserable. Yeah. They never catch you in a high. They always catch you in the low.
But that's when they're supposed to show up.
Bullshit.
That's when those angels come out. Well, yeah, that's what I know. In your mind, you're like, hey, bro, I'm having a hard enough time with this.
I mean, they'll know.
Last thing I need is for you to come down here asking me to change my glow stick.
When I was still in the hospital, they would send firemen in and people who've been in traumatic injuries, and they're like, you can do it. And I'm sitting there with my tray. I'm like, I can do it. Yeah. How do you fucking know I can do it?
Yeah. Right?
I'm like, I was hit by a bus. Were you hit by a bus? And they're like, no. I go, then you don't know if I can do it. Like, why you keep telling me I can do it? But they were right, thank God.
Sure. That's the best part about having a crew like that, is they see things in us that we never can or anticipate until we get into those moments. And when you hear that, you're like, man, you don't know nothing. They're like, yeah, we do. We know exactly what we're talking about. That's why we say it. Otherwise, that wouldn't be able to come out of their mouth. I just have one question. We don't have to put this in there, but have you talked to the bus driver yet afterwards going through all this? Tell him thanks for making you the warrior you are.
Thanks for the hookup.
I've never spoken to him. He did come by when I was in you know, really bad shape. My parents said it wasn't the time. And I have no grudges with him. And I hope to God he's heard my story. I hope he knows. Because, I couldn't imagine what he felt like when he thought he hit a garbage can. And just see some two legs laying out of the bus, on the ground. And so I was like, look, this is an accident. He didn't mean to do it. So he needs to know that I'm okay, and I hope he's heard my story. I know his first name is Patrick. I don't forget his last name. It was written up in a story. I hope he knows that I'm doing well.
Man, you don't think that's a sign from God? Your name is Matthew John Wayne. You're at the same house as Matthew Patrick or Michael Patrick Murphy. Right? I mean, put all that together. It tells its own story. I mean, here we are. You're motivating us, like you can't believe, man. I'm sorry. I see things differently like that as more of a blessing than a curse.
Definitely a blessing. No, I told my wife. I said they don't know.
Yeah, we didn't.
Because I said Andrew would have emailed me and told me.
Oh, you know, man, we'd have been all over that.
And I said he goes. So I said I need to go to Texas and do this in person.
Come on, man. I thought she's coming.
We might set that up now. I'm gonna round down two here.
Yeah.
Or come down here. We got plenty of tries down here. I'll run one with you. Let's pick one out.
I don't run. I'm the anchor man too, but I'll actually get out there and go with you if you come on.
Hold on. I'm going to go back to where you said.
Probably shouldn't have said that out loud. I'm going to run and get myself and stuff like that.
My running days are over.
Oh, good. Well, I'll ride with you then.
I'll ride. Although, so I switched. So I always have to have something going on in my life physically and a goal. Keeps my head clear. So after the Ironman, after everything, of all things, oh my God, I can't run anymore because it puts. I can run 3 miles. I'm in bed for 3 days because the way my gait, my upper body just ticks to the left, and so I started bike racing of all things. And I show up at a bike race in New York City in Central Park, and some guy goes, "Hey, aren't you the guy?" So I have this big shark bite of a wound in my quad. And he's like, aren't you the guy hit by the bus? I'm like, yeah, I'm the guy hit by the bus. He's like, what are you doing here? So I'm trying to bike race. So he goes, why aren't you biking with the adaptive athletes? And I got pissed.
Mm.
Like, I'm not an adaptive athlete. And then the gun went off and boom, 40 guys were gone. And I'm going, maybe I'm an adaptive athlete.
See, that's funny. That's what I thought you were. That's why I'm here.
That is how that came right. up.
I think that was the trigger to how you came up, because our buddy Kendall lost his arm in a rollover, and he's moving into the tri space. And we were talking about getting him a bike, and that is how your name came up.
I built a bike for a guy who had both arms missing. How about that? He rode across country.
That's awesome. Bro, the way everything turned out for you.
I can make it. We can talk about it. And if he needs help, I can make connections with the right people to build the right bike for this guy. But I was down in Florida training. So I took my adaptive athlete thing. I said, I called up the U.S. Paralympic cycling team. I said, here's my injuries. Here's my permanent. He's like, yeah, you're a C3 cyclist. I'm like, sign me up. Where do I go? So I went to Georgia for the national championships. And I didn't know anything about it. I should have done my research. But I signed up for the long course, like 36-mile race in Augusta, Georgia. And there was a time trial the next day. But I'm like, all right, do I bring my triathlon bike and time trial? Or do I bring my road bike and get out there with them? I brought my road bike. So they started all the C1, C2, C3, C4, C5, all men and women together. So there's like 50 people there. And I had no idea. There's no label on you. It says C3. Like, there's my guy. I got to beat him.
Right.
So, boom, we go. Next thing you know, we're sitting around and they're doing the award ceremony and they call me up for first place. I'm like, holy shit. I won my category. I'm a national champion. And they stop calling people. So I go over to the side before I go to the stage. And I grab the guy. Hey, you just called someone up for the C3 long course championship? Yeah, yeah. There's only one guy in it, Matt Long. I go, but that's me.
Okay, I'm gonna just put that together. All right, go ahead.
Can I just take my medal? I don't want to go up there.
Or at least get somebody to come up there and stand on both sides of it. Right.
He goes, you get up there. You're a national champion. I'm like, all right. I took that. I took the national.
Damn right. Hey.
Set at stage. That moment, I asked the guys what I had to do to qualify for the London Olympics. And I started to train. And then I got hit by a Buick in Florida.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. Oh, yeah. Right?
You got hit by what again? A Buick.
I got hit by a Buick. Oh. In St. Petersburg, Florida. Broke my arm. And I started to
It wasn't Patrick driving, was it? Dude, what's with you, man? You're like a magnet.
What? I don't get asked to play golf often. Yep. So me and my buddy Noel Flynn, the one who we have, are you scared? He came. I said, hey, would you come train with me? Because he was a good cyclist. He says, yeah, I'll come train. And he got hit too. So both of us got hit. He broke some ribs. I broke my arm.
Probably don't ride with you anymore then.
No, both of us kind of hung that one.
Bro, do you have that tattooed across your back? Are you scared? Or on a shirt? That's your motto, right? It has to be. Dude, that's awesome. Are you scared? Because there's a pretty good chance we're going to get hit by a bus or a freaking Buick while we're driving down here.
Same thing.
That didn't make the book. I didn't talk about getting hit by the Buick. Ah. So the funny story is it happens in front of a bar in St. Pete's Beach called Krabby Bill's. The bar empties out. And now the fire service has got it. And I thank God I had a pair of fire department cycling socks on. And I go to the guy who they put me in the Stokes. They got the collar on me and I'm letting them do their thing. And I go, hey, buddy. I go, I'm a New York City fireman. He said, can you do me a favor? He says, what do you need? I go, just take me. I have no idea where we're going, where we are. I said, just take me to a place you would take one of the brothers. I said, don't stick me somewhere. Take me to a good hospital. No problem. Took both of us. So I hear him. He goes like this. Now the crowd's out. And he sees a couple of guys in the crowd with FDNY t-shirts. So the paramedic says, hey, you fireman? He's like, yeah. He goes, so is this guy. And he's like, really? What's his name? And I can hear him. They're stumbling drunk. Happy hours. Good hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, those are the best guys to get on you.
So he goes, what's your name? I said, Matt Long. And now I'm like this, like, because I can't move my head. I'm looking, my eyes are trying to get all the way over there. Say, oh God, who's, I don't know what I mean. The only guy here with me is in the other ambulance. And he goes, Matt Long. The guys yell, again? And I, I didn't know them.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's great, man.
Where'd they take you?
They took me to some small little clinic, whatever, and they told me my arm wasn't broken. So I spent the rest of my time in Florida, came home, went to see my trauma surgeon. And I said, dude, I said, I got some problem with my arm. I got hit by a Buick. He was like, what? I said, can you just look at my arm? It's killing me. And he goes, because it's broken. And he took an x-ray. He goes, where'd you go? I said, obviously nowhere good.
Yeah, because as soon as they knew you were going to live. That's why they started messing with you. Like, hey, don't take it. Because I did my hospital rotations at Bayfront and in Tampa General. And then half of our crew went down to St. Pete. So there's great hospitals down there. They just knew you were going
to
make it.
You just didn't make it to one.
Yeah, they were like, hey, it's Matt. You know he's going to make it. Just take him wherever.
Matt, why don't you tell us where people can follow you, what you got going on, maybe kind of plug the book.
Well, yeah, the book is called The Long Run. It's on Amazon. It's cheap now. It's been out for a while. 43 long underscore Matt on all the social media accounts. I have a website, mattlongspeaker.com. I travel, do some speaking, you know, but this is it. I like doing stuff like this and shooting the shit. And we didn't even get into fire stories and stuff like that. So but we may have to have a part two.
Part two.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get you out here, man. Just like you said.
Yeah, you can come out here and hang out with us.
Yeah. So that's where I'm available to help. I started a foundation called I Will, and it was all about the mindset. Cause once I started thinking that I will get it back, that's when it happened. And I helped this guy, Hector, with no arms, built him a bike. He amazed me. So I would love to connect with you and Rousey or whoever and help with that guy with the, if he needs help with the arm.
Yeah, the absolutely. So what, just to wrap this up, man, I always love getting the wisdom from guys who have been through a lot. Like if you could tell somebody who's going through some stuff right now, like if they've been hit by something, if they're down, and that moment when you're like, you know, I don't know what's what. What would you tell them?
Well,
buy your book. We're going to do that for you, bro. Don't worry about all that.
Listen, I sent you guys a copy.
We got it. Yeah, we'll take care of that end, man.
If you're not big readers, get the audio. But since you said it, I had to tell the funny story about the book. Let me tell one fire story.
Hey, come on.
So I wasn't on duty. My wife's gonna be mad that I tell the story, but before I met her, I was in the city running around, you know, the bars, single. I met this girl in one of my bars. We went out, had a good time. And next, you know, we're in her 35 story, condo complex in the city. I think on the 17th floor. We may or may not have lit some candles. And next thing you know, I wake up and go, holy Christ, it's hot in here. And then we don't have a stitch of clothing on. And I'm hitting her with my hand going, oh Christ, turn the air conditioner on. It's hot. And all of a sudden I just wake up to the crackling. Her room is fully involved with fire. The wax from the candle.
Tearing it up, huh? I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
43 truck guys are going, truck. Yes, truck. So anyway, I wake up, get her out, get her roommates out, and I'm like, yo, get me something to wear. So they give me like a pair of shorts or so. I'm like, I'm wearing these shorts that I shouldn't be wearing. And the fire department comes, the local fire department, and this guy's nephew is in Bubs right now, in the Buds class right now. And he's actually in the 343 class. I think he's graduating or just graduated.
Okay.
So good numbers. I'm a number guy. So anyway, so Lieutenant Fowler comes in and he's grabbing my leg. Let's go. And I'm smacking him. I'm like, you know, laying low, but I'm smacking him in the helmet going, hey, it's good. It's good. The fire's in here. I know where it is. Come. I have the door shut. And he's looking at me. He's like, Maddie? I go, oh, Lou, it's me. He goes, oh, this is unbelievable. They get the line in, they start putting the fire out, and I'm laying in the hallway, soot, coughing up lung. The girls are all getting oxygen. And he goes, yeah, a lot of 7 to battalion. Go ahead. We got an off-duty member up here, made 1, 2, 3 rescues like I'm written up. I'm going, no! He's like, oh, hold on a second, Maddie. What's the matter? I go, No, no, no. He goes, where'd you come from? I go. He goes, another bedroom at least? I go. He goes, cancel that off, dude.
Redirect.
It's great.
Belay my last.
I wrote that story in the book, and my mother was giving these books out to all these priests and these bishops.
Yeah. All right.
My sister goes, Mom, have you read the book? And she goes, no, I didn't read the book. He's my son. I lived it. She goes, go to page 88. She's just calling up all the bishops. Can you please send the book back? Send the book. I don't know why he did this. I don't know why he's like that. Anyway.
That's awesome, bro. That's awesome.
Yeah, we want to get you out here just to hear fire stories. Those are my. Yeah. That's the best part about when we go to the house.
Yeah,
especially that. Yeah, 53. We love it, where that is, man. And just how that department rolls. Man, thanks so much for spending the morning with us, buddy.
It was, man. It's so, what an honor to have you on here.
I'm chomping on one more because you did ask me what I tell people, and I want to end it on a serious note.
Please.
And here's what I tell people: is just two things. You have to let go of the anger. You have to let go of the anger. If you're angry, if I was angry with that bus driver and for what happened, I never would have been able to clear my head to overcome. And then that's the next thing is we don't overcome shit. Adversity is something you have to learn to live with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you guys have been through what you've been through. Is that gone? Did you overcome that? You know, I got hit by a bus and every day I have issues going to the bathroom. I have issues walking. I have issues just whether I'm going to get up and do the right thing. And I live with it. When you learn to live with it and accept that adversity, you're going to be stronger and more powerful and more impactful than you can ever, ever believe.
Wonderfully said.
Thank you, man. Thank you. What a privilege to have you on here, bro. Thank you so much.
Bro,
man.
We have got to get you out here.
Me and my wife would love to come out to Texas. That's easy. Hit the easy button.
The easy button? All right. All right.
Hopefully we'll come out and celebrate you getting elected.
All right. Done. We'll have a watch party and election party.
Boom.
Victory party. Great. Boom. All right.
God bless you guys. Peace.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the show. Let us know what you think. You can follow us on social media, teamneverquit.com/social. Subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We've got some new gear in the shop, shop.teamneverquit.com. We will see you guys next week.